And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. In a few minutes from now, we're all going to be invited to stand and to say the Nicene Creed, the ancient creed of faith that ends with the words, "We believe in the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come." We say it, some of us, very regularly indeed, but do we think much about it? Some people will say it with great conviction. Others, in all honesty, won't be quite so sure, because it seems somewhat unlikely, perhaps somewhat improbable to them. Well, the Sadducees were in that final camp. The Sadducees held only to the authority of the Pentateuch, that is, the first five books of the Bible, believed to be written by Moses himself. And the Sadducees appear in the Gospels largely in order to ridicule the idea of resurrection. They reasoned that since they could see no mention of resurrection in the Pentateuch, it must therefore be an invention, a heresy dreamt up by a later contributor to the Hebrew Scriptures. So now they want to come to Jesus and confront him about this idea of resurrection. And as we've seen, their challenge comes in the form of a text that comes from the book of Exodus, chapter 3, in the Pentateuch. They say, "Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother." And so they come up with this wildly inventive scenario to try to make Jesus look stupid. Now, if you've seen it, it's a bit like Wallace and Gromit's A Matter of Loaf and Death. This woman, this widow, has got the kiss of death about her. I can imagine that after the first few losses, the next brother in line must have been quaking in his boots. She ends up being married to all seven and burying each one of them. So with glee, the Sadducees come to question Jesus. "Finally," they say, "the woman also died. So in the resurrection, who's going to be her husband?" Gotcha, they think. Well, Jesus believes in the resurrection, and he responds to this highly improbable situation in two ways. Firstly, he points out that they're making a category mistake. The resurrection life will not be exactly the same as this life. It'll be different, different order. For start, there'll be no more death. Death will be abolished. Relationships will be a bit different, and there'll be no longer any necessity for marriage. Jesus says that the raised will be like angels. Not angels, but like angels. That is, they'll be eternal beings, currently beyond our powers of imagination. Now, St. John, in one of his epistles, puts it like this: "Beloved, what we will be has not yet been revealed. What we do know is this: when he is revealed, that is, when Christ is revealed, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is. Isn't that stunning? Isn't that incredible? What a glorious prospect to be in some degree like Christ. In his book, The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis remarks, "It's a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest, most uninteresting person you can talk to may one day be a creature. If you saw it now, you'd be strongly tempted to worship." Something to ponder in the coffee queue this morning. And Jesus' second point reminds the Sadducees of a major story from the Pentateuch. Moses encounters God in the burning bush, where God says, "I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Not, "I was the God of these patriarchs who are now dead and gone forever." No, Jesus says, he is not the God of the dead, but of the living, for in him all of them are alive. Now, we all die. Our bodies dissolve away. But the death and decay of our bodies shouldn't really worry us too much. After all, science tells us that not one single atom in our bodies remains there for more than about 8 years. They are constantly being replaced by other atoms. So it's not a single unique set of atoms that makes us who we are. It's the way they're put together. It's the way atoms are put together. It's the pattern that is formed. And in my estimation, God is well able to remember that pattern and to resurrect it any time he wants to. As St. Paul wrote, it's God who can give life to the dead and call into being things that are not. Now, whether we find such statements persuasive or not will determine how we approach that clause in the Nicene Creed. But to assent to it means more than just concern about our own future after death or that of loved ones, important though that is to us. It's saying that we believe in a God of resurrection now, a God who can transform lives here and now, transform attitudes, transform societies, all of which are in some way in the grip of death. And of course, the proof of our profession is going to be seen in our everyday lives. With God's help, it will mean continuing to struggle with the defects of our own human natures, despite the setbacks. It means, with God's help, looking for ways to bring fresh life into troubled situations, whether that be the relief of those in need, the dismantling of unjust structures in society, or doing our bit to help this planet and its creatures at a time of great stress upon it, taking practical steps to reduce carbon footprints. And above all, it's going to mean being people of hope at a time when the world seems to be going to hell in a handcart. People of hope, because our God is the God of resurrection, who can bring life out of death, hope out of despair, in every situation, even in the darkest places. I believe in the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come, because I believe God is the God who transformed things, making all things new. Amen.